You're listening to White Two Words, a K-pop podcast hosted by three Black women. I'm your main host and leader, Aura, and my members and I are back at it again to discuss a K-music related topic. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to review, share, and subscribe to White Two Words. Tell your friends to search White Two Words or Unpopular K-pop Opinions on most major podcast listening platforms. Our intro and outro song is called New Vintage by Armani. Welcome to the preseason, because who said only football can do that? We're ramping up for season 3, so this episode is actually recording from a Twitter space. So we apologize in advance if the audio is a little bit finicky. We're discussing what it's like being a Black K-pop YouTuber. I'm joined by Black Into K-pop Coalition member Ashley Griffin, Adeolo Ash, and Bree from Bree Seasony. Collectively, they have a total view count of several millions. With me, Bora, moderating the discussion, you'll hear everything from getting recognized by your K-pop faves to how to get views. Enjoy!
Give introductions so everybody knows who you are. I'll just give a brief intro. I'm Bora from Black Into K-pop Podcast Coalition. I'm the founder. I'm also the main host at White Teen Words Podcast. We have three lovely creators here today that have been on YouTube for a minute and getting all the subscribers and views. They'll give their own introductions, but in case you didn't see one of our previous tweets, Ashley has had about like 2 million views, total views on YouTube. I think Bree has like, let me go back to the tweet, like 5 million, and then Adeola has, hold on, let me roll it up, total views of 15 million like on their YouTube, so they know what they're talking about. But let's go in the order of what I how I see you guys. Let's go with Ashley, Bree, and then Adeola. So please introduce yourselves.
Hey y'all, I'm Ashley Griffin, better known as Multifaceted ACG. It is a high probability you're going to hear a lot of background noise in my house, so just giving you a heads up on that. I'm the only content creator on here who is retired from YouTube, so I was there almost 10 years and retired last year, and still create content through podcasting, and I'm the founder of KPSN Podcast Fest, the annual fundraiser that we do for the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Very happy to be here.
Hey everyone, I'm Bree, or Bree Seasony from YouTube. I hope you guys can hear me. So I started making content on YouTube. I think it was like towards the end of 2019, I started taking it more seriously. I mostly make K-pop commentary, so that can be anything from like trending K-pop news or even covering shows. Like I did a couple series on net shows like Kingdom Legendary War, Girls Planet 99. I've also done videos where I react to some of my subscribers' input. So it might be like reacting to my subscribers' unpopular opinions or rating their favorite girl group songs, etc. So I guess I kind of do some of everything. And I'm currently at about, I think, 27K. So I'm getting there. But thanks for having me.
Hi, I'm Adeola. I started doing YouTube consistently, I think, in 2020. I talk about K-pop, and I sometimes just talk about celebrities in the Hallyu space.
Adeola, first of all, you hit like 50,000.
Yeah, I was so excited. Honestly, I never really expected to do well on YouTube, to be honest. So yeah, it was really nice to see that other people like my content. Really appreciate the support a lot. Thank you so much.
Still there. She just might be frozen.
Yeah.
So for the time being, I mean, you two are active, so you should tell everyone what your YouTube channel is, just in case somebody
right.
who's present
plug,
doesn't know.
Please plug, because we love a promo.
Oh, well, just Bree Seasony. It's pretty much the same as my handle on YouTube.
It's my first name and then space. A-S-H. I have it linked in my bio.
All right, perfect. We can just get started with the questions. What channels, or just a channel, if any, inspired you to start your own?
I don't really have any specific ones. I started YouTube just doing stuff that interested me, and it just kind of went from there.
Well, for me, I started watching a lot of K-pop channels, like, I guess between now and, like, when I first got into K-pop during second gen. And I actually started off as a reaction channel, which is kind of funny because now I'm, like, completely commentary. But one of the first channels I started watching, I hope someone knows the channel, Tumin Jink, Jink Jong-ki. They were, like, two best friends, and they would react to K-pop. Okay, so someone knows. I used to love their channel. Okay, Ashley, you know. Yeah, so I would watch them all the time. And also, I used to watch Dre, J-R-E, a lot. So I guess watching people like that kind of inspired me to do it. So I started off doing reactions. But I also, like, always liked commentary channels, even, like, outside of K-pop. So channels like It's Keisha, you know, stuff like that. So I guess I was kind of inspired by a bunch of different type of channels and tried to incorporate different elements to start making the kind of content that I create.
I ended up on YouTube in 2012. I'm sorry. Yeah, 2012, actually commentating on things that had nothing to do with K-pop. And I was influenced by Miles J and Nicola Fodi, who usually has stuff online called Soundly Awake, but they were big influences to me and Kev Jumba. And when I fell into the whole K-pop thing, I transitioned over, and I didn't have anyone except Michael Smith Grant, who I really was aware of, who at the time was called Mr. Popo TV. And through his audience, I was able to get introduced to Tumin, Jing Jong Ki, and it used to be, oh my God, I just forgot their names, a awesome duo overseas who I enjoyed watching so, so very much. And I'm heartbroken that I can't remember their name, but that's how long I've been in the game. And KCON introduced me to others who I was fully unaware of, because usually when you are starting as an MV reactor, you're not actively watching other people's stuff. You don't want it to spoil the experience for you. So I eventually started watching others once I branched out into other facets of creating K-pop content.
Great. Thank you, guys. So a lot of people have had issues starting their channels. I know for me, I've, like, restarted and started my YouTube channel. At one point, I was a fashion YouTuber, and then I did K-pop reactions for a while, which actually, those videos get a lot of views, but K-pop reactions just weren't for me anymore, and now I do, like, something different. So I'm saying all this to say, is this your first time you're starting your channel? Like, was this the first time you've seriously done one, or have you kind of been trying to do it and then this is the concept that stuck for you?
This is my first channel. I made the channel a while ago when I did, like, an art project, and I've just been building from there. I wasn't really taking it seriously from the beginning, so yeah, I've kind of gone through different paths, the reactions, and just, like, other stuff I was interested in. So I didn't really start off as a K-pop channel.
Yeah, this is also my first channel. Like Adeola mentioned, I did shift gears a few times, but this was, like, my first attempt at actually creating a channel.
First channel, kept the name, learned the hard way that once you pick a name, you are stuck with it. So the mouthful that I have, had I known what I know now, I would not have picked it, but it definitely has stuck with me.
Absolutely. And on that same topic, was the hardest thing about starting your channel? I don't know if I personally experienced this, but I think some people sometimes struggle with getting just that first step. So what was the hardest thing for you when starting your channel?
Honestly, for me, the hardest thing was not having my video be vertical. When I started, my little saying then was, I'm just a nerd with a camera phone, and I left it that way. I had other quality equipment as the years went on, but my stance has always been absolutely anybody can do this. So a lot of my videos have consistently been made with just an iPhone. But the hardest thing was not realizing if I turned my phone horizontal, then it would get rid of those random bars on the side. So my early videos when I first started were directionally wrong, and that was the hardest thing, just getting started with it looking aesthetically correct at the time. It wasn't 4K back then and all of that, so that was the biggest thing for me.
So for me, I don't know if it's just me, but I had a really hard time with editing in the beginning, like just finding a program that I liked and that was user-friendly and did what I wanted it to do. I just remember like when I first started spending hours on like getting a video on like how I wanted it to look or come out. So that was definitely frustrating in the middle. And the only thing you can do is like just do trial by error, right? Like as you keep going, as you make more videos, you kind of figure out how to edit really. I would say besides that, realizing how like YouTube SEO works or like search engine optimization, like the way you set up your video and like the title of your video, the tags, the video description, having a good thumbnail, all that stuff helps you get views. I kind of like had this idea at first, you know, I just post a video and people will watch it, but there's a lot that goes into it, especially when you're first starting and you don't have a bunch of subscribers that will only watch when you post, because that kind of pushes your video out in the algorithm. So I feel like when you first start out, you kind of have to know how to do that stuff to grow. So I would say those two things were the hardest.
Yeah, I kind of had the same struggles as you guys. When I started, I was like recording on an old phone. It was blurry, the angle was bad. With editing, I kind of knew because in high school, I used to be the one that did all the video editing for projects, but I still had to, there was still a learning curve for all of the newer technology. So yeah, that was difficult. And also learning how to do the tags, the thumbnails, and all of that. I used to watch Jade Dharmawangza on YouTube. She used to give a lot of tips on how to do all those things and know how to make sure your video shows up higher in the search and all of that. She doesn't really do videos like that anymore, but I feel like her older content is still relevant to that if you're looking for help.
Adeola, for people that might miss that, can you say the name of that creator again?
Jade, and then her last name is Dharma Wangza, Dharmawangsa. I think I spelled it correctly. But if you, yeah, she's an Asian woman. There aren't that many, so I think you'll be able to find her quickly.
Perfect. So as I mentioned before, I also had a stint as a K-pop reaction channel, and even though I would get like 25,000 views or whatever, that darn copyright strike, never see a single penny of that, which is like fine because it's like it's not my music. I get it. But how do y'all avoid copyright, and what tips, advice, or tricks do you have for getting around YouTube's pesky copyright algorithm?
I'm very interested in what the newer YouTubers will say because you ladies started in 2016 and 2019, you said. So my era on YouTube is when they were just figuring out how to flag ourselves for that. We're the ones who set the standard for you all having to deal with it now, unfortunately. So I'm very interested in what it is that you all will share. I do have experience with it, but it won't be the same as what you all are experiencing. So interested.
So when it came, when I used to do reactions, I would kind of just be like, whatever, I know I'm going to get a copyright claim. I wasn't really worrying about like monetizing the video. The annoying part is like certain songs that you react to, instead of just getting a copyright claim, which means you won't make any money, sometimes it'll just get blocked. So no one can watch your video like worldwide. So I kind of like would just avoid certain songs that I knew would get blocked. Like I knew if I reacted to Monsta X, it would always get blocked. So I would avoid reactions like that, and just wouldn't try to monetize the reactions that did go through. But as far as like the content that I make now, I mostly do voiceovers with commentary. So if I'm using like a music video from a group or like an artist, or if I'm using content that's not mine, I'll just edit in a way so that YouTube's automatic, I forget what it's called, but the like identification system can't pick up what it is. So obviously I'm talking, so I mute the sound completely so YouTube won't pick up on the audio, and then I just edit the video, like the image, the clips, in a way that YouTube won't pick up on it. So I might do like 10 seconds of footage and then skip 5 or like 10 seconds ahead and edit another 10 seconds in. I might slow down the video. Like there are different ways that you can kind of slice up the clips and edit them together so that way YouTube won't realize like what it is and won't claim it.
I hope that made sense.
Copyright has been such a struggle for me. I've had labels strike me before, specifically SM. They're kind of crazy with their stuff. So what I've learned to do is the music for me is just off limits to a lot of them. I just try to avoid it altogether. With visual stuff, what I've learned to do now is I take a screenshot of frame by frame and then put it together, because if you don't have it as the full movie moving, the content ID system tends to not pick it up. Sometimes you can't avoid it, because what I realize is these labels and companies have people actually they'll search up your videos on their stuff, watch the video, and then they'll manually copyright stuff in your video, and you might just have to cut it out. So over time, I've just learned who to avoid and whose stuff I can use. But that's pretty much it. Sometimes I just have to like post it on Patreon and call it a day.
Wow, I did not realize they hired people to do that. It makes sense. And, you know, you got to protect your bag. But at the same time, that is just so extra to me.
You know what's even funnier? A while ago, I made like a compilation video for Jimin from BTS's birthday. And every year, Big Hit comes back to copyright strike it again. I think they do it because they do it around his birthday. I think they do it so they can take the money from people watching stuff on his birthday, because they know it's still fair use. But they come and they copyright it every year to keep getting money from it. And then I always have to keep cutting it out. Like the video, I think, was like 13 minutes originally. It's like 8 minutes now. I'm just like, yeah, stop playing games.
Brie, were you raising your hand or were you disagreeing earlier?
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, what she was saying about avoiding certain content completely. There are like a lot of bigger reaction channels that, you know, never get blocked, and I've heard that it's because a lot of them have some sort of like deal with the companies, so that like their reactions will go through. They won't have any copyright issues because they already have that deal, right? But if you're a smaller channel and you don't have that deal with the company, you'll just get completely blocked. So that's why, like, if you're a small channel, you might react to something and you're like, well, why did I get blocked? But I see this channel that has like 500,000 subscribers and their reaction is up. That's probably why.
That does play an impact. It does. There are times where, and it has nothing to do with your subscriber numbers. A lot of people think everything is based on subscription. It's about the impact of what it is that you do. And you can have a handful of people in a label and or artists, if they're indie, will contact you to see if you're open to do it. Their PR will or anything of the sort. So there is some truth to that, but that can still come back and bite you in the butt, because doing it for looks and for exposure for their audio, and you might not be compensated whatsoever, meaning they can come back later and slap you right on the hand with a copyright strike. So there's another side of business that needs to be taught the content creators to prevent those kind of instances happening. But when you're fresh into YouTube, you don't know that. Nobody tells you.
Wow, that's so funny. For anybody listening, I was trying to get, I don't know if anybody knows who they are. They're called like Faux Squad, I think. Is it Faux Squad? It's like two dudes, and
yeah.
I don't really watch them, right? But I've seen they have like reacted to Jessie, and now they've like taken pictures and like, I assume, I don't know if hung out seems like a stretch, but like, you know, have like made acquaintances with her. And I was trying to actually get them on this panel because they do have a male perspective that's not here on this panel today. And I thought that would be interesting, especially since they've worked with artists directly. But I feel like they could possibly be part of that. Just the fact that they like seem to be in cahoots with Jessie, they probably don't get struck for her music if they react to her. But that's very interesting that you say that. Eddie, did you want to say anything?
Oh, I was going to say definitely, because I remember a while ago I was watching a video Desi March and Briz Life did, and they were talking about how labels contact them to tell them to react to certain people's videos. So yeah, it's definitely a thing.
Wow. The more you know. That was really great. So my next question, when did you know you were like onto something in regards to your role? Like, was there a specific video that did better than what you've been doing before? And you're like, okay, I'm seeing something here, or anything else?
For me, it was one of, I think it was one of my earlier videos. It was before I like completely shifted gears and focused on commentary. I had like less than 1,000 subscribers, Has anyone heard of the group Kachi? Okay, so they're like a UK-based, I guess they call themselves K-pop, or maybe their company does, I don't know. I reacted to their debut song, and I kind of like, it was a reaction, but it was more a commentary. I kind of talked about like, people's perspectives on them and what people were saying. And that video at the time got the most views that I'd ever gotten at the time. So I think it was like 30K. For me, that was like a really big deal. And it actually got me like a lot of subscribers. I went from like way below 1,000 subscribers to like over 1,000 subscribers after I made that video. So that I would say that video really let me know like, okay, well maybe I should focus on like more commentary based content than just reactions, because on top of that I realized I enjoyed commentary more than reacting. It just felt more natural for me personally.
I am an old head, so my intention was to never make YouTube my work, and I don't discredit anybody who does, not in the least bit. My intention was to always pivot it for off-screen work, and that's what's allowed me to have longevity in the fan base community. So, three things that distinctly let me know I was on to something in regards to my channel. I saved up and I was super broke in 2013. And I went to the second KCON that was in LA long before I made it into the convention center. And I got to see panels of people I admire in journalism and choreographers that I loved. And I was so excited and put all of that content on my YouTube channel, just a genuine fangirl moment, the enthusiasm. And I remember tweeting, like, man, I saw all these amazing people. And I know I'm just a little YouTuber, but maybe in 2 or 3 years, I'll be able to be on a panel. And I was on a panel a year later. So that was a huge channel moment for me that somebody realized, okay, she's got something. Then off of that, the panel I had was the second to the last on the final day. And I think G-Dragon was there. So nobody was there to really see me. But the people did show up, and you know your panels are good depending upon how much they fill in while you're doing it. And I had media and press from Korea as well as from Best fill in to watch it, and it ended up leading to a collaboration with JRE of JRE KML when she was still doing reactions with them. That was sign number two. Number three, an artist knew who I was based on my channel. Couldn't get no bigger than that. I don't care if I don't ever have another subscriber again. It cannot get any larger than them identifying you and knowing exactly who you are based on your reactions and your energy about their craft. So those were the three key moments for me.
Who was the artist?
Bam Bam from GOT7, and then I've also had a
No
stare off.
way.
I've also had a stare off with Meethrogen from Epic High, and I mean just some weird things based off of what happens on my channels. And I'm grateful for those experiences, but those are legendarily my top three, unequivocally.
Dang. Okay, Ashley, I see you.
I don't know. I don't think I've had that moment yet. I don't know if that's strange. I don't think I feel like I've made it yet. I still kind of feel like I'm in a bubble, and I find it kind of strange when I go to like these kind of things and people know who I am. I think that's kind of when I feel like, oh, there are actual people watching me. I think I don't really think about it, right? I don't really think about it like you're getting these views, but you don't really realize that people know who you are and like they actually get excited by your presence. So I guess like fan or like audience reactions is what makes me feel like I've made it, like that people actually care about what I have to say.
Absolutely. You, as a creator, when you see your metrics, you don't really register, at least for me, maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but you don't really register that those numbers are actual human beings. Like, I don't think they're bots, but I'm like, well, some percentage of that has to be bots, right? Like, that can't all be just other human beings that I've never met in my life and possibly will never meet. Like, that's crazy to me. But that's great. Thank you so much for sharing. And oh my goodness, so many great stories. My next question for all of you is, what do you want fellow Black K-pop fans to know about creating content in this niche? And you don't have to emphasize on Black K-pop, but I wanted to just make sure to mention that because I think there are some things that Black K-pop fans in particular experience that other K-pop fans may not. So, yeah, can you guys tell me what you think about that?
no one commentates like you do. Like, accept that part off bat, that nobody is going to do commentary like you do. You have three people on this panel, and every single one of us can look at the same video, and we're going to acknowledge different things in different ways. So it's not a competition. You are not competing against YouTubers who either started right when the pandemic did and boredom shot their numbers up because everybody was online. You're most certainly not going to compete with JRE. There's no way. You are your competition. So just be pleased with your style and mimic no one else's. That's the thing I would want a new content creator to know.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Ashley. Especially when you're a small YouTuber, it can kind of be detrimental if you compare yourself to other like bigger YouTubers. You definitely just want to stay true to yourself and be an individual, and just focus on enjoying it. I think that's what I would definitely tell someone. I think sometimes some people get too caught up on numbers. You really have to enjoy what you're doing, because if you don't, you're just going to end up getting burnt out. And you're just going to want to stop. Another thing I would say besides that is you have to have thick skin. I know it sounds horrible, but you really do. Especially if you're tackling controversial issues, you have to have thick skin. Definitely say how you feel, be honest, and be genuine when you're talking about issues like that. But also prepare yourself for some of the backlash you might get. It won't happen all the time. And sometimes comments you get will kind of be like, whatever. But just kind of prepare yourself for that and don't let it stop you from doing what you want to do. Like, don't let it discourage you, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you'd be surprised that, well, what I've learned over the years is that being Black in a K-pop space, that alone, even if you don't do anything controversial, it pisses people off. Like, back when I used to do reactions and I'm loving the song, not even offering any like critique or anything, there are white people in the comments calling my wig stiff, calling me slurs, all kinds of crazy stuff. And it's just like, just realize that they just don't like you because of your skin color, and there's nothing you can do about that. There's nothing wrong with you. Just keep going. And the people that like you will gravitate towards you. And focus on people that like you. Don't focus on people that don't like you, because not everyone's going to like you. But Bree said about the thick skin, yeah, it's going to take a while. Since you guys are on Twitter, I'm sure you guys already have a certain level of thick skin, because this app is crazy. But yeah, people are just going to call you slurs for all kinds of crazy things. I've gotten the death threats. I've been told I should be lynched. I've been on incel sites. I've seen a lot. But it's what I've gone through over time that prepared me for today. You're going to be fine. Because back then, years ago, I was like, oh, this is so bad. They told me to drink bleach. I was freaking out. And guess what? I'm still here. And I'm stronger than I was before. So you're going to be fine. Just keep doing you. Protect the stuff you do, because I've had my videos taken by non-Black creators, and the views they got was crazy. Like, my most popular video, it was on Han Hyunmin. He's a Nigerian-Korean model. I spent 6 weeks working on that video every single day, going to Korean sources and stuff. It was so hard. I lost weight because I was doing so much work. I put the video out, it did really well. Then another Black creator completely copied the video. They got hundreds of thousands of views within days. And I was like, this is crazy and so unfair. Luckily, I did complain to my audience, so they went to go talk to the creator, and the creator made the video private. I'm just like, they made thousands of dollars within days off my hard work. So be careful. Just protect yourself, but just know what you're doing is good, and other people are going to try to copy you, but you're going to keep doing what you're going to do. Don't give up.
Wow. I was not expecting all of that. Thank you so much for sharing. This wasn't part of the planned questions, but I did want to maybe elaborate on that. Are there, not to trauma share, if that's even a word, but do you have any other maybe stories, all of you, about just the, frankly, abuse that you've experienced as a Black fan in this space? Because I feel like a lot of people want to act as if it doesn't happen. I feel like I was just seeing this discourse a couple of days ago or a week ago about this, about like how Black fans don't actually get the abuse that we very much do. And one of our coalition members aren't here, but I know they were even targeted by, I don't know if you remember those doxing accounts that were rampant last year or a year and a half ago. So, do you guys have anything else to share about this issue?
It's definitely a reflection of the consumerism of the generation because I was exempt from that. My stressors came from working with labels, working with magazines, having my magazine stolen, and all of the content that the people who worked with me and for me had to scrap back for. But the discourse on the comment area and whatnot, K-pop in 2012 was still a novelty, something you still pointed at people and laughed at because they liked. Now we're in a window of time where both this J-pop and rock and being a fan of anime is the norm. And it's amazing how so much can change in 10 years. It's trash out here with the interactions that people have. And this doesn't exempt me from some interactions I've had on Twitter, but compared to what the newer content creators, and I'll never say younger because someone can be 100 and get started today and they would be a newer content creator. But the thing that newer content creators are dealing with is awful. It's debilitating in ways that I haven't experienced, but it's extremely real. And I really want people to stop dismissing it just because it hasn't happened to you or it hasn't happened to you yet.
For me personally, it's just been a learning curve of learning how to protect myself from these things. That account that was doxing people, I think it was in 2020, and they came back again last year. They did reply to one of my tweets. Honestly, I feel like it's only God that's protecting me all this time from not getting doxed because I have a huge target on my back. Yeah, I think I just, when I talk to my friends who are outside the K-pop space and I tell them what I go through, they just try to assure me that people wouldn't react to you this way if you weren't doing something good. Obviously, you must be doing something very impactful for them to have such a hateful response. Like, how are you, a stranger that doesn't know me at all, spending years stalking and harassing me? That's dedication. You know what I mean? So I'm just like, you can't, I've tried to take the harassment as a compliment in a way that I must be relevant enough to you for you to do all of this. Like there was a guy, he came on, he did like an hour long video on me, cursing at me. He said that I'm trying to start a race war, that he fears for his grandmother's life because of me. He also claimed that he was Korean American. I ended up doing a copyright strike. He's not Korean American, he's Vietnamese, 25 year old man living in Los Angeles. And I'm just like, okay, if you have the time to come online, lie about your identity, cursing at me, obviously I'm doing something good because how are you thus pressed? Even I don't have an hour long video doing that. And I don't come online cursing at K-pop idols. So you know what you're doing is wrong. Because it's so funny, he came online to call me a liar, but he's the one lying too. So like, it's just, you just kind of learn to ignore it, I guess. But I've also taken steps to protect myself. Honestly, the best advice I could give to you if you're scared of getting doxxed is basically just myself up. Like I've tried to see what information on myself I can find and if there is private information out there that I can get taken down. I know for a lot of people, if you move and stuff and your name is on there, people can find your address, so you can get that stuff taken down. For phone numbers you use on sites, try to get like a Google Voice number and stuff like that. But yeah, I just it kind of leads you to leave it living kind of a secretive life because you can't overshare like the average person. You just kind of have to realize that you are to a certain extent like a Z-list celebrity in a way. So you kind of have to be careful because there are people that are just going to pick on you because they want to. So I don't know. That's the best advice I have.
Emphasis on that. You are to somebody, you are a big deal celebrity. To you just a person who turned on your camera in your bedroom and made a video. But to some of the people who viewed you, your fan base, and it takes a while to get adjusted to calling them fans, but your fan base, they are loyal AF. If you've ever seen that skit on YouTube of, oh my God, I just forgot the dude's name. Basically, his friend just way too hard for him. Like, some of your fan base will become that.
Yeah, so I've never, well, yet, right? Knock on wood. I haven't had any like scary doxing scares yet or anything like that. Besides like just regular ridiculous comments, which I just block. I think the weirdest thing that happened was 2020. I did a video on when Victon posted a choreography video dancing to that Breonna Taylor tribute song. I did a video on that and how it was like extremely inappropriate.
And basically, people were like circulating my video on Twitter. I had people in my comments on the video saying they were going to report my channel. I got an email from YouTube, and it was basically like, you received a privacy claim. So basically, a lot of victim fans were like mass reporting my video and saying that I included someone's private information, which obviously wasn't true. They were trying to get it taken down. So yeah, I just had to block a bunch of people on Twitter. I just blocked a lot of people from my channel because the comments were crazy. I think I actually made it to not Panchoa. It was like some like I wish I could remember, but it was like a blog where K-pop fans would talk about issues in K-pop, and someone actually posted my video there and was talking about how I was getting harassed. So I thought that was really funny. But that's the craziest thing that happened to me, but it kind of died down after all. I think for me, that was definitely a wake-up call, because I was like, oh, okay, I do have impact at this point. And, you know, the things that I say, you know, they will resonate with a lot of people, but they'll also, you know, ruffle some feathers, I guess. So yeah, that's the only thing I can think of right now.
Well, honestly, shame on anyone that does that kind of stuff. But also, that time and dedication is truly fan behavior. Not fan behavior that I want, fan behavior. Because there's no other logical reason on why you're dedicating that much time to someone that you supposedly don't like. But that is insane. And I'm sorry that you guys have dealt with all of those issues. And hopefully in the future, it gets better, because that's just crazy. Staying on this topic for one more question, both of you have, well, mainly Bree and Adeola have touched on this a bit, but I wanted to talk about cultural appropriation and racial issues in K-pop, and why is it important for you to cover these issues even though you might be on the receiving end of some wrath from fans?
For me, when I first spoke about it, it was just me venting about the situations I was dealing with. But later, at a point, I was getting to the point of being done with K-pop because I was tired. And I was like, I wish someone had warned me so I'd have known what I was getting into. Because when you speak out about these things, even as a fan, you say, oh, I love them, but I have issues with A, B, and C. They start saying, oh, you're not a fan. She's an anti. You're fake. You're doing this because you hate them. And then they start harassing you. I wish I had known ahead of time that that is what I would be dealing with. And that is kind of, it's pretty normal to have racism and cultural appropriation in K-pop. So I kind of just did it to warn others that this is what you're getting into and this is what you're going to have to deal with. And if you're not ready to deal with it, I would advise you to figure out what you want to do, because this is just the reality. And some people don't want to be fighting all the time, you know, but some people don't mind. Some people will say, okay, I'll educate, but just know that this is what you're getting into. And also, my main target for these videos has always been Black K-pop fans, but what I've noticed is non-Black K-pop fans are also learning, because I guess when they see the individual events, they don't care, but seeing it together and those kind of things, they're like, oh, wow, now I get it, which is kind of annoying to me, because I'm just like, okay, you're ignoring Black fans all this time, but when they see it all together, they're like, oh, okay, yeah, now I get it. So I guess it kind of helps some Black stans, because their co-fandom will better understand.
Yeah, going off of what Adeola was saying, I think it's important because there aren't many Black K-pop content creators as it is, and there's even less of us that are talking about issues like this. I feel like most people know like the big reaction channels, but I don't think there are that many K-pop commentary channels in general. You can probably think of the biggest ones like and count them on one hand. So that's why I think it's really important for, you know, us to speak about racism and cultural appropriation. And also, like I said, there are a lot of K-pop fans who are like on Twitter and trying to explain, you know, why they're hurt or why they're offended about certain things. And a lot of times they kind of get spoken over by non-Black fans. So I've had so many of my subscribers and like people that watch me say, I'm so glad you talked about this because I was fighting for my life on Twitter this morning, or like, you know, nobody was listening to me, or I got gore sent in my DMs because I was trying to explain how this, you know, idol did something really disrespectful. So I think, like Adeola says, I think sometimes when non-Black K-pop fans just see people arguing on Twitter, they're like very quick to say, oh, whatever, you're just an anti. But for some reason, if someone talks and there's like a platform attached to their name, it might make more sense, or it might kind of get through to them a little more. Of course, there will still be some people who just don't care, but it's definitely helpful.
It wasn't a platform I sought out. KCON actually picked me to do it. So this wasn't a part of the path that I wanted to pursue. I like laughing, like using the opportunity to enjoy this stuff for comedic relief. I tumbled into this stuff when I needed it most for my mental stability. And because of them creating a platform for it and having me as a moderator for it, I ended up over the years becoming a point person and often picked to speak on misappropriation and things of that sort. And I luckily, and perhaps unluckily, but luckily because of the platform that was provided, I never had to directly start those conversations on my YouTube channel, which is why I do believe there was an exemption for me with some of the things that I could have experienced as a YouTuber. You had to pay to hear me talk about it, for lack of better terms. You were either in attendance at an event or you have hired me to come speak about these things. And I think there's perhaps 6 instances of a decade on YouTube where there's an intentional video produced talking about something. So being able to step away from that, not that I'm afraid to have those conversations, but making distance from what the YouTube aspect has presented me to be versus what I've rotated around being in the past few years. One of the biggest things that I saw from that is it's a full reflection, the capacity to be able to ignore racial tensions and whatnot. And I'm commentating on another minority culture's entertainment. There's some lines that crisscross there. And a lot of that can play into how foreign fans become a fan of this. We come to it because of anxiety, of PTSD, of depression, of not fitting in somewhere. And those things have been able to allow me, with the event that we do every year, to unify and show that even in spite of the things that you negatively see going on, both on YouTube and on social media as a fan, there is still a healthy fan base. People who just genuinely enjoy this, want to talk about these things if the opportunity is presented in a safe and healthy environment, and learn from each other in that way. So again, I totally agree when the statement was a platform can help. It totally does. But how much of that platform do you want to use to expose yourself to those type of moments in your energy, for lack of better terms?
Yeah, I agree. I also wanted to say, don't think just because you're Black that you're obligated to speak about these things. You have every right to just be, enjoy things like everybody else.
Absolutely.
100%.
Yeah, you don't have to 100%. Do the labor. And I was going to bounce off of something Bree said about like giving a voice to Black stans that are normally silenced. That was actually part of my kind of villain origin story, because I remember it must have been in 2019, because that was when the music video came out. I saw a Black girl on YouTube and she made a video defending Lisa's Kill the Slow Breeds. And I remember the video had about 100,000 views, and I watched it. And I was I remember being so upset, because I was like, why? If you don't care about it, why would you come on here to say that it's not a problem because you don't care? Well, you know, there's so many other people that care, and that non-Black people are going to use what you've said to silence other people. And I'm just like, I think that became something that also drives me, because I'm pretty much disconnected to a lot of other K-pop groups these days aside one. So when these racial issues happen, it doesn't necessarily affect me. But sometimes I'll make a video just to offset all the other non-Black and the few Black people who will come on and say that I'm Black, I'm not offended. Like when Espa, Giselle said the N-word, Giselle is no one to me. I don't even know who she is. But I came on to make the video just for the Black Espa stans that I know are going to be offended, but I'm not going to have anyone to come on a larger platform to explain why it's offensive.
Yeah, and I agree with what Abiola said too. Like, yes, you do want to speak out for certain issues, but you have to have balance, right? You know, you can speak out when you want to, but don't don't overburden yourself, because you also want to protect your mental health. You can get like so burnt out if video after video is just that type of stuff. So I would definitely make boundaries, you know, especially with your audience. If you're on social media, you might have people reach out and be like, Bree, did you see what so-and-so did? Or, did
did you hear about this? It's okay to be like, yes, you know, I did see it, but I really don't want to make a video about this. I'll let someone else do it this time.
Absolutely. That has happened to me too. I mean, on our Whitey Words, which is on the Jumbotron right now, Instagram, I do post stuff like that,
but not from the perspective, like the critical perspective, more of like, I'm about to air y'all out and leave y'all to the wolves. Like, I don't know if you guys saw like Queen Wasabi and Ashby, that video that was going around. And I just kept the video, Happy Black History Month, and just left it for people to get mad in the comments. Because my approach to this, at least, is this is awful that these people are doing this. And maybe it's a little bit cynical to think I don't really have any power. Like, yeah, I can be mad about it, but then now that's detrimental to my mental health, and I'm just protecting myself. So what am I going to do? I'm going to clown you for it, and you're going to catch the shade. And that's how I'm going to deal with it. But I really loved everything y'all said about that. Just to reset the room, please join our Twitter community. What is the Twitter community? I am not 100% sure, but you can, when you tweet, you can either click like everyone or Black Twitter, Black K-pop Twitter. So that's what a community is. If you through the Jumbotron, you'll see the link to that. We also have a newsletter, so please subscribe to that. All you have to do is check out our profile and you'll be able to easily just subscribe to our newsletter there. And also we have an Instagram, which is the same exact handle as this account, so please check those out. So thank you so much for joining us. All right, so the next question I have is, we'll make it a bit more light. Okay, which video of yours do you expect to do well but actually ended up flopping? Because this happens to me all the time.
Ooh. Ooh. Day 6, no eye. Letting go when they had just let him. Not only was I too emotional in it, they took it down within 3 hours of it being posted, and it took me hours to edit it. That one stands out forever in my mind. So I think all of 5 people got to see it, and it never set off from that.
So mine is a very recent video, and the funny thing is, I kind of know going into things like what videos my subscribers will probably watch and which ones they won't. So this time, like, you know what? I'm going to do a poll first just to kind of gauge the interest, right? So I was like, hey, guys, I'm seeing AT's in Newark. Would you be interested in a video? Like, you know, just talking about my experience at the concert, whatever, whatever. I think like over 5,000 people voted on that poll, which is a lot. And it was like overwhelmingly less. I think 90% of the people said yes, maybe like 10% said no. Posted the video, it flopped. Like, not even, I don't think even like 10% of my subscribers watched it. Like, I think it got like a couple thousand views or whatever. But, you know, about that, like, sometimes it's not even about like whether a video does well or not. If it's a video that you really want to make, which I really had fun making that video and I just wanted to share for whoever watched it, it makes it worth it. So I didn't even really care flopped. And the funniest thing, like, I texted, like, 2 of my friends about this. Because when I was at the AT's concert, there was a girl in my row, and she was screaming the entire time. She was like, Yosang, take your shirt off! Kidnap me! Like, she was crazy, right? I posted the video. Like, 3 hours later, she comments, and she's like, oh my god, you were in section 18, like, row 4? Like, I was in row, did you hear me screaming? I was screaming for Yosang to take his shirt off. I was like, oh my god, I can't believe this girl found my video. So even though it kind of flopped, like, it only got a few thousand views, I found the crazy girl that was sitting in my row. So that made it worth it.
Definitely, that's really cute. I don't know, for me, I always hope that the videos that I work hard on will do well. But if they don't, I don't really mind, because like Bree said, as long as people get to enjoy it, it's still something. Because when you think about it, 100 people in a room, that's a lot of people, even though that'd be considered low views on YouTube. So it's like people still appreciate it. One video, though, that I will say that I'm salty about that didn't do well was when a former member of Black Swan, her name was Hemi. It was a video about her being found innocent. A while ago, this man came out and said that basically she scammed him. And What really annoyed me about that situation is that so many Korean YouTubers dragged her to hell. I don't know if you guys know about the streamer who, trigger warning, recently took her life. And there's another YouTuber who's a man who is getting exposed right now. It's like PPKA. He had to make an apology video because he was one of the main ones that exposed her as a feminist, which is like bad in Korea, and had all of these men harassing her. He also made a video on Hemi. And the situation just made me so mad because when it came out that she was innocent, none of those people made a video about. I know a lot of people that speak English didn't really care about the situation, so I didn't really expect the video to do well. But it just made me mad that I couldn't do anything to help her, I guess. You know what I mean? Because the video didn't have an impact. And she's had to hide on social media for nearly 2 years now. It's kind of ridiculous. But yeah, that kind of frustrated me.
Wow. Oh, thank you for that. I actually do remember that situation. It's kind of sad how people get dragged through the mud. And if they're innocent, no one talks about it afterwards. Next question. What are three things you always do to maximize the amount of views or clicks or impressions you get?
Personally, for me, I think everything with YouTube for me is like a guessing game these days. But something I do with my thumbnails is I try to have them vary as simple as possible. Because I've noticed the more complicated it is, like the more you have, the more people there are, the more words there are. I think that takes people too much time to process. But if it's just like a picture of a person, one person on a solid color background or like a blurred background, people tend to click more. Also, I try to post when I think people are active. Posting in the morning, I realize, doesn't work, even though YouTube advises you to do that. Posting more like in the afternoon, like noon to 5, 6 p.m. works better. Unless you have a really engaged audience, because someone I'm subscribed to, he posted a video at like 11 p.m. and it still did crazy. So I don't know. It's really a guessing game.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Brie. Go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say, yeah, the algorithm is really weird. So sometimes it's a guessing game, but like Adiola said, thumbnails are really important. And also, I feel titles are really important too. You kind of want to word your title in a way that people know what you're talking about, but also at the same time, you want to make them curious. So for example, like if you're making a video about, I don't know, like why an idol is like, I don't know, getting backlash or something, you might not want to say the reason why. You might want to like pose it as a question. And that way people might be like, oh, what's going on? Like, let me click on this video. Like, I have an idea of what's going on, but I'm not really sure. So that's definitely important. And I guess also knowing your audience and just knowing what they want to see. Because if your subscribers, if your audience watches it, that will definitely push it because they're the first people that will see it. And then, you know, if they're watching it, if they're clicking on the video, if they're watching it for like a good amount of time, it makes it more likely for YouTube to push it out to more people, whether that's on their homepage or whatever. So I would say those things are pretty important.
Hold on, I had to swallow my dinner. Okay. YouTube Content Academy or YouTube Creator Academy is a massive resource. You are able to take a lot of classes for free before you get started as a content creator, and as well as you are a content creator, to learn a lot about things that will work when you're getting started. So that saved me on my route to my first 1,000 subscribers. Thereafter, having thumbnails that were very, very similar to whatever the most popular photo was of a group, excuse me, or whatever was closest to a clip from their video was a huge asset for me, massive asset, particularly with my fangirl version playlist. There was another YouTuber who is Chinese American, and she used to make a whole bunch of EXO fangirl version videos where she would just obliterate the words to a song. And I did a video in honor of her, and it ended up becoming a thing that I was doing. So if I could find a still image from the video and then add what I needed to in terms of text on it, keeping it as simple as possible, people who aren't paying attention would click it by mistake because it looks like the video. And once they hear the hot mess of it, they would stay. And the third thing that was very helpful, not only just knowing my audience, but knowing the audience of those artists. Not every artist that I did reactions to or had commentary for or did press for concerts were people I personally enjoyed. So you need to know the audience. What are some of the jargon, the things that they say when they talk about these artists? What is the fandom's song, if you will? So doing that little back history, doing a little bit of research work helps you a lot when you're talking about it so that you are really talking to the people who love them the most.
These are all really great tips, and I'm literally about to listen to this recording afterwards and take hella notes. By the way, this is recorded, so like just bookmark this space, and it will be available on Twitter for about 30 days or so. Okay, so my next question for y'all is, why do you think your most viral video or most viral piece of content got the amount of views it did?
Because Paris Gobel talked about it on Instagram. I wouldn't have a leg to stand on with YG Entertainment, Bang Bang Bang, or anything that she choreographed had she not come across my channel and thought I was ridiculous. And she shared it on her Instagram account. And I had fans in Australia and New Zealand for the longest, like to the point where they were trying to fly me out there so that I could sit in on one of her dance workshops and whatnot. So that is the sole reason two videos of mine are the greatest views, because she personally had something to do with them.
Well, my first, I guess, mini viral video blew up because no one likes Ollie London. It's so funny because I came up with the idea like randomly. I don't know why. There's something wrong with me. I woke up, I was like, what if I edit this video? Because it was around the time when NCT Hollywood was announced. And so Ollie London went on TikTok, I think, and was like, oh, I want to join NCT Hollywood. I identify as 25 years old, so I meet the criteria and all that stuff. So I edited, I think the video title, it's still on my channel, like NCT Taeyong react to Ollie London wanting to join NCT Hollywood, right? So I edited the clip of Ollie London talking about how they're joining NCT Hollywood. And then I edited in Taeyong. I don't know if there are any N citizens. I think there might be a couple. Taeyong was like at some amusement park or something, and he wanted to go to a cafe, but it was closed. So he had like a meltdown. And I edited that clip like he was reacting to Ollie London wanting to join, like, oh no, like that, right? And I put like really dramatic classical music, and it was weird. It was really crazy. But the video got over 200K views, and I was like, how? Like, why do people want to see this? Why do people think this is funny? So I guess that's why that one kind of went viral. The other one, which is now my most viewed video, was talking about the whole thing that happened with, I guess, former member of Day6, Jay and Jamie. I talked about that issue. And the reason why I think that got a lot of views is because obviously everybody was talking about it. And at the time, I don't think there were many people on YouTube that had addressed it yet. Like, I think there were a few people that kind of summarized what happened, but they didn't really like give commentary and give their opinion on it. So I think that's why that one got so many views.
For me, my most popular video was the video I did on Hyunmin, the one that I worked like so hard on. I think people liked it because it was a hopeful story, because he went through like so much bad stuff, but in the end it ended up really good, because I've had people like comment and tell me that they rewatched the video for motivation. So I think that's why people liked it. I honestly don't know. Maybe they just find him. He's also attractive, so that could have helped because of the thumbnail. So I don't know. It could be both interest in different experiences, a nice face, and also a motivational story.
No, your video actually made me cry. Like that's how motivational it was. I was tearing up. I was like, oh my gosh. It was just the way you edited it and his story too. Because I knew who he was, but I didn't really know everything that he went through. It was so good.
Wow, thanks. I guess I'm not sure if I could say I'm glad it moved you to tears, but I'm glad you liked it.
I really like that video too. I also like the YouTube short you made, Fatu, but if you don't want to talk about that one, that is fine.
You know what's so funny? Oh, sorry. Finish what you were saying.
Go ahead.
What I was going to say was also another tip for anyone that wants to get into YouTube. The reality of the K-pop space is the weirdest stuff do the best. I'm just telling you the truth. When I think it was during the Espa Giselle situation where she said the N-word, and Fatu like a day or two later posted a TikTok where she like mouthed the N-word to an Aminé song. And the joke just came to my mind to say that she was the only K-pop idol that could say the N-word. But I also knew that I was going to get like backlash if people are going to say that like you might not want to say that. I didn't really think that Fatu would care, so I went along and made the joke. And it's surprisingly, it's like the most viewed short I have on my channel, 2.6 views. Because I think a lot of people, there were some people that didn't know what the N-word was. And then also that it was just a strange title, I guess. So I think a lot of people clicked on it because I made another video about her. And I was like, oh, the first African K-pop idol, and did like the whole thing of like her story. It only got like 800,000 something views. So yeah, like weird stuff tends to go viral. And it's also like a joke with Black Stans of like, it's kind of like a tongue-in-cheek joke because so many idols say the N-word, even though they're not supposed to. So yeah, it was just kind of like a shady joke.
I love that. I love a good shade throwing. So I'm glad you mentioned that. So my next question for y'all, by the way, these are the last two. We'll wind things down. Let's see. How and what do you use to edit?
I use Final Cut Pro. I used to use Filmora, but I hated it. But now that I have a MacBook, I just use Final Cut Pro. I really like it. And then for my voiceovers, I just use the Apple voice memo thing. I think that's what it's called, voice recording, to record my voice with a mic. And then I just edit everything in. And if I'm on camera, I'll use my phone or my camera instead of like, you know, the voice memos.
For me, I started with iMovie, but then I started bouncing in between different editing apps because it's hard to find ones that will give it to you free that they won't put a watermark on it. But yeah, I'm kind of in between apps right now, but I don't use anything too complicated. Just find an app that you can cut up videos and you'll be fine. But iMovie was to start.
I believe I started with whatever the default was on my Dell computer all those years ago.
Windows Movie Maker?
Yeah, buddy. I'm telling y'all, second gen content creator for real. So I believe that's what I started with. And I ended with Filmora, but since this is about becoming a content creator, I will be transparent. Some of the things that I used and or promoted for editing, that was because I was a paid ambassador. I was compensated to do so. So for a very long time, I was the brand ambassador for Reactor TV, which used to be an app specifically for creating reaction videos. And I'd be able to edit them and right size them and all that good stuff there. And that was a good relationship, and being able to have something like that again, I don't think that's going to happen ever again on the scene to the same capacity. So I do encourage, when you're getting started, to start with what you have. You will be tempted to try to compete, but again, as we said 40 minutes ago, you can't compete. You are your only competition. So you want to start with what you have. You don't want to start plopping down money into something that you don't know if it's going to be a regular commitment, a hobby, or something you're just trying out because you've heard you can make money on YouTube. So start with what you have first and then grow from there as your channel is growing.
Absolutely. And the last question, by the way, everyone, if you do have questions for these panelists, definitely feel free to, you know, directly, you know, tweet at them or message them. Just for time's sake, we won't be taking questions at the end of this like we did for our last Twitter space. So our final question, and then we'll set y'all free. Who are your favorite groups or K-pop artists that you like to cover on your channel? And they don't necessarily have to be the ones that give you the most views, just personally, you, like, who are your favorite people to cover?
For me, it's Black Swan, and my bias is Fatu, and Judy is my bias wrecker.
Well, I kind of talk about whatever is going on in the K-pop scene, so it can be anyone, but I'm kind of SM trash. So NCT, SHINee, solo artist Taemin. I'm also an ATEEZ, so ATEEZ, Ace, drawing a blank. But those are some of my faves. But I kind of talk about like whatever's going on right now in K-pop. Those are usually the people I talk about on my channel.
Most of my content, if it was focused on a specific group, was GOT7. My bias is Yes, and my bias record is them too. And beyond that, I would grab whatever was of interest. Since I love music, the appearance of it was always fun to watch, but that's what made pivoting into podcasting so much easier. I could focus on the music and not the distraction of how beautiful all of these people are.
But are there any last words you guys like want to say before we head out?
I'm the queen of the shameless plug. Y'all know me. just letting you lovely people know, as I am retired from YouTube, the channel information and content is still there. However, I do greatly appreciate your support as a podcaster. If you look for A3daypodcast.com, I am traversing every single album, every discography of every idol group from the past 30 years. Also, for those of you who are interested in learning more about creating your own content, every quarter I take in mentees. If you go to my website, multifacetedacg.com, and click mentorship, it is the application window for the spring cohort. So learn a little bit more about creating content, owning your brand, and most certainly not wearing a cape, because you cannot save and do everything. So that's it.
So first, thanks to Bora and Black in the K-pop for having us. It's been a lot of fun. Yeah, I guess you can follow me on Twitter, and my channel, like I said, is BreeSeasony. I also have a Discord. It's pretty fun. We have like 1,700 members at this time, so if you just want to talk to me or other K-pop fans, you can join that as well. And yeah, that's about it. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Bora, for inviting me. I was honestly scared because I had bad experiences with live events before, but I'm so glad I came. Yeah, you guys, my YouTube is in my bio. I talk a lot about Black Swan, but I also talk about like Black people in the Hallyu space, and sometimes I shade K-pop idols for doing anti-Black stuff. So if that's what you're into, yeah, you can subscribe to me. And yeah, thank you guys for coming. Also, for anyone that wants to start a YouTube channel, also know that, like I think Bree said earlier, do what you like and do what you love. Don't focus on what's popular, because you'll just hate it and not do the work, but because it's difficult and you'll be discouraged. And liking it as well keep you going. So make sure you focus on what's passionate to you.
Thank you all again.
So thank you, Bora.
Thank you, of course. This was so fun.
Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to review, share, and subscribe to Whiting Words. Tell your friends to search Whiting Words or Unpopular K-pop Opinions on most major podcast listening platforms. Our intro and outro song is called New Vintage by Armani.